Take it with them on a bus or train, on a highway or on a plane, backstage or on a bike. It's Kevin Kline's Fuzzy Mike.
Fuzzy Mike interviews. Not top of mind, not even the news.
No way.
Just a bunch of stuff that Kevin likes. All recorded with his fuzzy mic.
You get the Don King reference. It looks
either that or a tip of a horse.
So we'd like to thank you all ahead of time for listening to Fuzzy Mike with your friend Kevin Kline.
What a pleasure it is to have an Emmy Award-winning TV host in with us, but who's also a conservationist, a guy who's concerned about the planet, and a guy who loves animals just as much as we do. Jeff Corwin, how are you, sir?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much.
Great to have you in.
Delighted.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Tell us about what you're doing at Moody Gardens.
Well, I'm so excited because a passion project of mine, which is called Expedition Chesapeake, an incredible large format film that we've spent years producing with the Whitaker Center, celebrating the largest estuary in North America. We've now spread our way here into Houston. So we're open up at Moody Gardens. We've got our new residency there. You may think that Chesapeake is so far away, but you have your own incredible bay right here.
We do. And you were instrumental not too long ago in covering for MSNBC and also NBC the oil spill in our bay and in our Gulf. How has that affected wildlife in our area?
Well, the Deepwater Horizon had a powerful impact on wildlife. I think I kind of look at it as Pandora's Well. You know, Pandora's Box, you regret you opened it.
Yes.
Pandora's Well, you're great you tapped into it. And I was basically at ground zero covering this entire coast. And we look at events like that and we are kind of taken aback by them. But right in your own bay, this incredible resource, Galveston Bay, every year you have over 200 spills. Now, many of these are small spills, but sometimes they're bigger. And I think moments like that, like Deepwater Horizon, are very powerful for us because they're a big blip in our radar screen. But the truth is, we have a tremendous problem with management of these important resources that is nothing new. So, I mean, look at the wildfires in Australia.
I was going to talk about
those. All of these issues come to a point of sustainability. So the great challenge with something like Galveston Bay, this incredible wetlands ecosystem that connects freshwater with saltwater, with southern prairie, to coastal forests, all these ecosystems, the nursery for this entire coastline, what happens is we discover that when that begins to collapse, it's like the canary in the coal mine of the challenges that we face.
How sad does it make you when events like that happen?
Well, I was just in Australia.
Okay.
I was filming there for a documentary I'm working on and also for my television series on ABC Ocean Treks. And it's kind of overwhelming to me that in the 21st century, a creature like us that's so smart keeps making the same mistake over and over and over again. But my point from before, which connects to your question, is that we look at the fires, we look at the oil spill. It's kind of, it's like a little sparkle fairy for a cat, you know, laser pointer sparkle fairy. But the underlying condition, these are a symptom of a greater malady, which is, for example, climate change. We can look at how climate change has changed the ecosystems in Australia to create this fire that has burned at one-third of their national parks, has consumed an area the size of West Virginia and ecosystems, has pushed a dozen species to extinction. We can look at the issues that we have here with climate change, with poor habitat management, runoff, pollution, unsustainable practices with agriculture have contributed to challenges. With that said, there's a lot of hope on the radar screen. We see a lot of positive activities that people are doing that show a sign of promise. And that, I think, is the spirit of Expedition Chesapeake. We kind of wanted to take the challenge of conservation. We wanted to take the complexities of science. We wanted to take the joy of adventure and distill it into this one incredible spectacle of a film, which is what this film does.
I was talking to an oil and gas executive last week, and we were talking about when is our dependency on fossil fuels going to end. And they said, you know what, the supply is going to run out, but what's going to run out more quicker is our want and desire for that. So that's got to make you pretty happy.
That may be true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They said because of solar power and wind power that probably the necessity for it, the consumer is not going to want it.
And necessity, what drives necessity is consumption, and necessity is often the mother of invention that causes us to make these changes. But also it's about connecting people to the resource that we depend upon. I'm an outdoorsman. I love to hunt. I love to fish. I love to explore. I like to protect. I love conservation. And Texas embodies that in so many ways. People are probably surprised to find out that because of all the places to go in the world, I filmed many of my episodes in Texas. I've been involved in Texas and conservation efforts for many, many years. Texas is the top of the Isthmus of Panama. This is the gateway to South America. We mix all these great ecosystems. Texas is kind of symbolic of our pioneer spirit, our entrepreneurism, great conservation, but also is the poster child for many of our conservation challenges that we face.
You were talking about ecosystems and all that kind of stuff. I remember your special with Anderson Cooper, Planet in Peril. How in peril is our planet?
Well, we're in great peril right now. I'm working on a very big, what I consider, you know, my biggest project that I'll ever do. It's a concept called Legacy. And we're working with Roadshow Pictures on that. And basically, it's kind of, the idea is it's not over yet, but we're the last generation that's going to determine what our children will inherit when it comes to natural resources, the planet. We are really only 20 years away from losing 50% of all our species. In the last 45 years, we've consumed 65% of all our planet's life. So think about that. We lose 3,000 acres of rainforest an hour. So you get distracted by that. That's an area, two-thirds the size of Texas, scraped off the planet every year. But meanwhile, just right down the street, head a little bit to the left and in Louisiana, we lose a football field every 45 minutes of marshland. We have those same issues right here along this coastline, which is why Galveston Bay is so important. If you're going to go out tonight and you're going to have shrimp, keep in mind that those shrimp begin their lives in Galveston Bay. The fish, the sheep's head, all the commercial and recreational fisheries, the nursery for that resource is this bay. 8 million people are directly connected to this bay. If we fail to conserve this bay, as we've learned from the lesson in Expedition Chesapeake, again, positive news, last 5 years, much cleaner than it's been in over a century.
Fantastic.
But if we don't learn those lessons, really, who do we punish? It's our children that pay the price.
Yeah, our future generations, for sure. Jeff Corwin, Emmy Award-winning TV host, is our guest. Now, I want to segue into the world of animals, because that is what many of us love you for and many of us know you as. But I'm going to preface it by going into the environment and speaking about Florida and their ecosystem. I've seen you wrangle 30-foot pythons before. How is Florida's Everglades being attacked by rogue pythons?
Well, I don't love the story, but I love the adaptability of the snake story about pythons. So Florida is a semi-tropical place, just on the level of what it is to be subtropical. So back in the 80s, snakes were really popular. And everyone, you know, who was a snake kid, you know, who didn't ever want to have a girlfriend, had a snake in their bedroom that their mother hated in a tank. Well, eventually that snake got too big, and people thought they were doing the snake a favor and they'd let it go. Or Hurricane Andrew blew out exotic animals and they escaped that way. So if you let a snake go in Houston, which is a little higher, or where I live in Massachusetts, you know, that snake may survive for a little bit, but eventually it becomes a snakesicle when it gets really cold.
Sure.
It dies. So you talk about the power of genetics, the will to survive. So this one type of snake, the African rock python, lives in southern South Africa. which can experience a little bit of a colder zone. So these snakes escaped or were released through negligence or accidents. That's why Florida has very strict laws on having snakes, because of this incredible environmental catastrophe. So you have one female snake. She happens to be pregnant. She lays her eggs. She has 70 eggs. Out of those 70 eggs, 40 hatch. Out of the 40, maybe 5 make it to adulthood. They have eggs. Now that you can do the math, then a cold snap happens. It kills off all but one of those babies. She has eggs that survives. The survivability then increases because we've selectively, genetically found the cold-tolerant snake. So now you have cold-tolerant snakes that are surviving in a semi-temperate environment that is basically an open smorgasbord for them because they have no natural predators. They eat everything from alligators to endangered key deer. And there's no commercial use for these snakes. You can't repurpose them for pets. Mm-hmm. They've tried everything. I don't know what that solution is, but that's a powerful example of the impact of non-native species. You look at Hawaii, and I just came from filming in Hawaii. In Hawaii, today there are 45 mammal species. Only 2 are native.
Is that right?
The hoary bat and the monk seal. Both are critically endangered. Out of all the Hawaiian bird species, 75% are extinct. And of those remaining, 95% of them are critically endangered. That's largely from invasive species.
So being a conservationist and environmentalist, with these numbers and these stories you're telling us, what keeps you awake at night?
If I forget my Ambien is what keeps me awake. Yeah, but
maybe the 2 kids.
Yeah. I literally just got home from Australia, and then I was in Uruguay. Just got home a week ago from Uruguay. What keeps me awake at night is, are we going to wake up in time? I know there's still hope. So right now I'm focusing on working on a documentary about Australia. But the idea with Australia is I want you to be dazzled by the fire, but that's the veneer, because underneath it is, again, koalas. We think, oh my God, these fires have killed off a third of the koala population. Koalas have been in trouble long before these fires. Habitat loss, chlamydia, believe it or not, a sexually transmitted disease, is killing koalas, and dogs have stressed the population by 80%. So this is kind of the straw on the camel's back. This could be our finest hour, where we could really rise up. We have the technology, we have the skill sets, we have the passion as a community. If you focus group people under 30, 80% of them, environment, climate change. We are at the most critical stage for the future of our planet. And yet we have taken the most passive approach to saving our planet. We need to make radical changes right now. And if we fail to do that, our children will pay the price.
What is a big change that an individual like myself could make?
Well, there's so much we can do positively to make changes. We know that plastics have a huge impact on the environment. I see it all the time. I just was literally rescuing sea turtles off the coast of Uruguay, and they're filled with plastic.
Are they really?
Almost 70% of every bird sampled from Chennai, India to the coast of New England has plastic in it. We dump over 10 billion pounds of plastic into our oceans every year. We can easily remedy that problem by making simple changes on how you use plastics. If you can reduce that significantly, the idea that you can have water served to you in a vessel that can spend 200 years in a landfill is kind of crazy. What does not motivate us to make those changes? It's pure laziness. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing we can do. The other is to really look what's happening in your community. So we want to focus on the great international challenges, But what's happening right here in Texas? What's happening in Galveston? What are the challenges with securing this incredible estuary habitat of Galveston Bay? It's why we've brought this film to Moody, to basically make that connection. The most important thing you can do is, if you're an adult with children, is to take your children out and connect them to nature, because you really cannot protect what you do not love. And you'll never love it if you never get to meet it. So it's building the relationship with these natural resources, putting a face to that endangered species. That's the first step. And looking in your own lifestyle and how you live, where you get your food from, how you manage your waste, and how you participate civically, philanthropically, and politically. We have some tough decisions to make. If we stay in the present course, I guarantee you, we will see the extinction of an incredible celebrated mammalian species in the United States probably within the next 10 years.
You were talking about extinction. I know that you've been on all continents except for Antarctica.
I've never been to Antarctica.
The way that the global warming crisis is happening and we see ice glacier shelves falling apart every day, are you concerned that you might not get to go there before it's gone?
Well, I actually have been close to it. I just was in Tierra del Fuego 2 weeks ago.
I want his life. Yeah. Man!
Filming pumas and Andean condors. So I've been close. And I I've spent a lot of time in Alaska. And I have spent a lot of time in glaciers doing stories about them for climate change. So Yakubchova Glacier, which is one of the largest, most important reservoirs for freshwater in North America, in Greenland, loses from climate change enough water an hour to supply New York City with water for a year.
No way.
That's how fast we're losing. And we're seeing that now. And, so the challenge with something like climate change is the roller coaster's left the station.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop that momentum, but you can mitigate the impact. We can mitigate the impact of a car accident with seatbelts and airbags. So we're now in that stage, and with our planet and our children's future, we're environmentally looking at seatbelts, airbags, to try to minimize the impact. And there are things we can do. But the truth is, polar bears, there's only 25,000 polar bears left. 70% of the perennial ice is gone. That ice is gone in the last 20 or 30 years.
Wow.
Polar bears need ice. Even though they're classified as a marine mammal, they can swim 60 miles a day. I mean, they're actually protected under the Marine Mammal Act. At one point, they need to get out on the ice to have their families, to hunt for seals. Penguins. We just lost an area the size of Manhattan, just slipped off of the Antarctic shelf. How do you get, the monkey back in the barrel there?
Well, thanks to the good folks at Moody Gardens, they have a great penguin program there. And we see every year at least a couple born there. I know your time is tight, but I have two more questions for you.
No problem.
Question number one is, an anaconda or a monkey, what scares you more?
Oh, I'm never scared by anacondas. I love anacondas. But, monkeys, they're a whole new set of trouble.
People want monkeys as pets, but you say you're not a fan of them.
Well, I love monkeys in the wild.
Uh-huh.
Listen, I've seen chimpanzees hunt colobus monkeys in the wilds in Uganda. I've seen monkeys at their best and their worst, and I love monkeys in their natural world, but primates out of that element, where it's they're probably the best example of what you should never ever ever have as a pet. They're incredibly hard to keep in a captive environment. But I love monkeys, but I certainly wouldn't. I've been bitten by a monkey or two, and I literally got bitten by a monkey once in India, just minding my own business.
Really?
A rhesus monkey came up and bit me right in the kidney, and then the biologist came up to me and said that, oh, don't worry, 90% of them have like hepatitis. I was like, what?
No, oh my gosh.
So I was, may not some other disease. I don't want a letter from India that they don't have hepatitis, but it was
something. Brought up getting bit by a monkey. You've also been in a very dangerous situation with an elephant. Please tell us about that.
Well, a long time ago on Planet in Peril, working with endangered elephants and moving them from one area to another, I got attacked by an elephant. And almost had my arm ripped out by the elephant, but survived that and had a chance. That was actually in Cambodia, and one of the elephants there had either stepped in a landmine or had lost its leg to a poaching snare. And it was basically a tripod. So a dog can make a tripod. Elephants don't make good tripods. And we had gone back there because they were at it. This was for another book I wrote in a documentary I did called 100 Heartbeats. And they were going to actually potentially have to euthanize the elephant because it was becoming too impacted by its weight. It wasn't going to survive. And they didn't know what to do. So Cambodia has tremendous problems, as many countries do. And at that time, technology was really not there available. But what they did have was some of the best prosthetic science because of landmines. But they could not justify taking a prosthetic time energy for an elephant when there was a year waiting list for people. The people of this village donated money to fit that elephant with a dynamic prosthetic leg. And that elephant survives today. So that is another powerful example of the powerful opportunity that people can play a role. So ground zero for habitat loss, deforestation, black market of wildlife, Cambodia. But the people stood up and saved the life of one elephant. And sometimes it's that one magical moment that can inspire a revolution. And that's where we are today. We need a revolution, a peaceful, sustainable revolution of what we want our planet to be like for our children.
Well, it's very interesting. You're going to be at Moody Gardens, because the one thing that I always remember about Moody Gardens is that right next to the rattlesnake exhibit, they have a mirror and it says, what's the most dangerous animal on the planet? And it's us.
Yeah. And by the way, this is something I learned in Texas. So 70% of all rattlesnake bites in Texas, 70% of the people that are bitten by rattlesnakes in Texas, those bites involve alcohol.
75, I thought that was pretty low.
Yeah.
Jeff Corwin, you are a brilliant man. Thank you for doing what you do for the environment. Thank you for doing what you do for animals as an animal lover. I wish I had your job, but I am not capable of doing what you do. Thanks for all the entertainment.
Thank you very much.
And for enlightening us through your life.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Emmy award-winning TV host, biologist, conservationist, environmentalist, Jeff Corwin. My thanks to Jeff Corwin, to Jerry Hamachek, Moody Gardens, and John Breland for arranging this conversation. This episode of The Fuzzy Mic was produced by Bill Tater. The Fuzzy Mic executive producer is Trish Klein. Social media director, Lisa Tynan. Production elements by Zach Sheesh at The Radio Farm. I'm your host, Kevin Klein. Thanks for listening. For the video presentation of this chat and other content, visit www.thefuzzymic.com and remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. See you next time on The Fuzzy Mic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Fuzzy Mic with Kevin Klein. Check back often and stay fuzzy, friends. Fuzzy Mic is a presentation of the Kevin Klein Fuzzy Mic Industry, Incorporated, LLC.